Welcome to SharePoint at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. I'm Sherry Bettine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. I'm here today with some of our SharePoint experts. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. You can start posting your questions now through the Skype Q&A window, and I have some of your questions that were sent to us in advance. We will make every effort in the next hour to answer all of your questions, but if we can't, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue answering questions and append that footage to the video that will be posted on our site at microsoft.com/ITShowcase. With that, we'll get started with our experts introducing themselves. Jared.
Hi, my name is Jared Shockley. I'm Senior Service Engineer inside Microsoft IT. My previous role, I ran all the on-prem SharePoint custom portals that were heavily customized for Microsoft to use. Currently, I'm in a position where we're moving a lot of our systems, including some of our customized SharePoint, to Azure.
Hi there, my name is John Norris. I'm a Program Manager here in Microsoft IT. I work on several custom publishing SharePoint sites, including the Microsoft Library one that was mentioned in this course.
Yeah, hi there. My name is Sam Crutzen. I'm a Senior Program Manager here in Microsoft IT. I do most of my work today on Delve, Delve Profile, Delve Analytics, and Enterprise Search.
Hi, I'm David Johnson, and I'm Program Manager Architect, and I work with 365 and SharePoint Services. I guess if you'd say specialty for questions, I kind of cover pretty much everything but for SharePoint. But when it comes to architect, to solutions and governance and portal are typically my areas of specialty.
Okay, great. Let's get started. We'll go to Jared first. What are some of the challenges you have running SharePoint in Azure?
One of the biggest challenges is the SharePoint stack originally with 2010 and 2013 was not built for the cloud. It was built to be run on-prem. As the product group that runs Office 365 started making SharePoint working in the cloud for Office 365, they started finding some ways to improve how it can run. So one of the things I'm looking forward to in 2016 is it being able to run better in Azure as well. One of the biggest things that we run into, though, is the latency between the servers and the storage that is kind of the key problems in Azure. Having to design the storage properly so that we can get the maximum performance out of it has been real interesting. Luckily, they've been bringing forward the premium storage SKUs, and there are some things coming soon, it looks like, with storage with IaaS servers in the cloud. Once we get that, we can then easily run almost our whole infrastructure for custom portals in the cloud. Even though we're in a hybrid model, we don't have to keep them in our data centers. We can run them in the cloud as well.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jared. Question, are there any plans to improve the Delve profile so that additional attributes such as office, job title, etc. are indexed for searching?
Yeah.
Is this a Sam question?
Yeah, I think this is one that I can address. So that's actually something that we're hearing from customers all over the world. So I have to walk the line here. I don't want to out the Delve product group before they're ready, but I am aware that they know the need here. I know that they're working on things. I don't have an ETA to share today, but I would just give confidence that they know that this is something that is desired out in the marketplace. It's desired here at Microsoft, for that matter. And it is something that's on their roadmap.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but we also do our own custom import for other properties in addition. So not only do we have the standard properties from Delve, we have additional attributes from our SAP system, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So, with our own internal implementation, like a lot of major enterprises, we have internal tools where, our HR department, tracks a lot of information about our users. We have custom import jobs that push content into the user profile store, and that's something we'd also like to be able to surface through the Delve profile. So we're like you, good news is coming.
Thanks. Next question. I get questions from customers on our e-discovery capabilities for on-prem. Holds on file shares are a frequent point of discussion, as well as strategies to reduce terabytes of content that customers often have. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
So one thing we do, in fact, we've been having e-discovery conversations lately. Today we have an e-discovery center on-prem and another one on cloud on 365. The on-prem one consumes from the on-prem index, and that includes file shares. So when legal says they want to, say, check a bunch of content, if it's not already indexed, they may load it onto a file share, which then gets picked up by search, crawled, and brought into the e-discovery index. So yes, our legal team is a heavy user of e-discovery for any content that basically through SharePoint or, and of course, crawled from anything.
Don't we also in the legal area, we have a huge record center for archive data as well?
That's true as well.
And then that's also tied into the e-discovery for long-term searches.
And we've got record center on both premise and cloud as well.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Next question, I believe for you, John. Can you integrate content from non-SharePoint sources into your SharePoint Online portal?
Yes, actually. And we mentioned some with like file shares, but in the library specifically, we actually have a third-party library catalog. It's a SQL-based program. And so we've done several ways of interacting with that content, one of which is we take the content out, and we can actually create SharePoint pages or list items, which are then included in enterprise search, and other people can pick up on that. So we do that often. We also do real-time calls for, like, to check out books, for example. But that SharePoint Online and SharePoint On-Prem make it very easy for you to interact with your data, no matter where it's stored, either by interacting with the systems directly or by creating custom jobs to pull it out and put it into a SharePoint data set.
When adding to that, one of the nice things with what was introduced with SharePoint 2013 as well as 365 is the updated object application model to allow everything running effectively integrating with SharePoint but not having to be on the SharePoint servers. So whereas historically that library portal on-premise had full trust code running on the servers directly consuming from the library catalog system John mentioned, now that same solution is running as an Azure provider application embedded in the SharePoint experience.
Okay, very good. Next question. Will we ever be able to map SharePoint Online user profiles to Azure Active Directory extended attributes like we can in SharePoint 2013?
I suppose that one sounds like me. So if I'm understanding correctly, let me restate the question in a way that I think it was referenced here. So with the on-prem user profile, you can do a sync and map certain user properties in Active Directory. So you can do a custom sync of those attributes into your user profile store. I am not aware of any investments planned to add additional connectors to Azure Active Directory. However, the news is still good. With the object model, you can actually take any profile attributes, push those in. So for example, if you wanted to write a job that pulled it from AAD and pushed it into the profile store, you could do that. Or like we do here at Microsoft, you could pull from on-prem or a database and push into the user profile. So I guess the direct answer to your question is no, I'm not aware of any investments in that space, but there are other ways to solve this particular problem.
Yeah, and what I would say is that API was refreshed just earlier this calendar year, so a new bulk API to enable those exports. And I know that API and samples, I believe, are on dev.office.com already. But we use it ourselves. Our updated profile import tool, which does extend that Dell profile already for us, is using that API.
Okay. Next question. What is our strategy towards ransomware protection on one file storage like OneDrive or OneDrive for Business?
So the ransomware issue is where somebody gets infected with ransomware and it goes and encrypts. Mm-hmm. The problem you run into is potentially could that tie back to a OneDrive for Business share somehow. Good thing is, and I'm trying to remember if OneDrive for Business has this turned on, version control. Is version control turned on automatically?
I think so.
I believe it is as well, which means it can't go back and change all the prior versions, so you can at least recover prior versions once you've cleaned the ransomware from your machine. That's going to be the critical part. You have to get your machine clean. If you can stop it from syncing before, if you have your infection, can stop it from syncing, then that won't get to the cloud, and you can just re-sync from the cloud. One of the things I know I do lately, I find I've flattened and rebuilt my personal computers a lot more because everything's synchronized with the cloud, and I can install everything so quickly and easily. It's better than, you know, I'm running into, it's just not performing. Okay, I'm just going to reinstall Windows and then copy everything down, and I'm back and working in like 30 minutes, where before that was like a full day event.
Right, it's a lot faster than troubleshooting, I find.
Exactly. it's part of the, you know, as I talked about moving to Azure, it's part of the cloud mentality of we no longer really troubleshoot servers anymore. We spend about 30 minutes like, okay, you know, delete it, bring a new one. And I think it was Jeffrey Snover, I've heard it said several times, is stop treating your servers, and I even treat my PCs, stop treating them as pets. Treat them as cattle and, you know, just kind of call the herd a little bit every once in a while.
Well, and I would add that the other part from a strategy standpoint is basically segmenting user access. Where does that employee have access? What is your risk? A tenant admin, for example, which is theoretically your point of greatest exposure, doesn't have default access to any site collection. They have to actually be explicitly added to a site collection to get access to it. So that user, what is that surface area of attack, I guess, effectively? Yes, you want to worry about what that user has read access to, write access to. You want to make sure that that's managed appropriately within the enterprise. But you also want to make sure that the, that if sites are being secured properly, we may have divisional sites, for example, in our Windows division that the rest of a company won't have access to at all for various reasons. And and that's how, if one person in a OneDrive for Business site gets brought, you know, effectively encrypted because someone's account isn't compromised, then at least it's not going to go after everything else.
And you've limited the damage to exactly. The single user space. Yeah.
And the good thing about most ransomware is it's connecting to the file server type connections, whereas OneDrive and OneDrive for Business typically aren't. They're synchronized down. It's only when it's synchronized back to the cloud that you have the real issue. And most of the document libraries aren't being connected as drive letters. So the ransomware can't see those things, unless it's at a drive letter, unless somebody's done mapping of a drive.
I mean, obviously a smart author would go and learn all the APIs and consume from the graph API and know how to pull everything down.
Exactly.
I guess it's theoretically possible.
That would be a very bad actor.
Okay, great. Next question. We are currently using SharePoint on-prem and have noticed that within Apple OS, Safari is the only browser that allows check-in, check-out ability for document lists. Will this expand to other browsers like Chrome, Foxfire, et cetera?
An interesting one because, first of all, SharePoint does support, I forget, there's a list of all the browsers it supports, and that includes Chrome and Firefox and obviously Edge and IE. And in fact, you know, Chrome works great, and we use it all the time for validation and so on, for example. As far as versioning, it's a library setting. So it's interesting if you're not seeing the ability to set library settings and versioning on one browser, but you're able to see it in another, I'm not sure why that would be, and I would file a support case to kind of try to do some investigation.
Yeah, that shouldn't be the case.
Okay. Next question. Access web apps has not been enhanced in a very long time and does not have anything on the roadmap. What is the future role for this app in SharePoint? And I know we speak from Microsoft IT, so we can't always answer roadmap questions, but do we have anything to contribute?
Well, that's actually a challenge. I'm not sure how much that team has publicly disclosed on that front, because the future of SharePoint Day from last week talked a lot about integration from other experiences like the Power Apps as well as the new Flow. We didn't talk about other technologies in that space, so I'm honestly not sure where we are, so I can't comment directly.
I can't comment directly either, but I also know there's Logic APIs or Logic apps and APIs in Azure, which is kind of like Flow on steroids that developers can then take and expand upon. Very similar to the Flow system, and I know the Power Apps, like you said, that's been there for a while now in preview, and it really is driving that. I'm curious as well. I'll say from an on-prem farm management when we were when I was running the team, we rarely installed that access component. Many teams did not take advantage of it, and that could be something that the product group saw as it's only being used by a small user base because they get good telemetry on usage.
Yeah, but I'd say it depends on the scenario you're after, and that's where I'd come bring this back is to say, look, what are you trying to achieve with access? Is it an end user trying to build a form and integrate data scenario? In which case, that's kind of what Power Apps is designed to do. Power Apps is designed to get the data and bring it into some system, and then have flow potentially of workflow on top of that. As far as there are other things I know that Access team is working on, and I know, but again, it comes back to the scenarios themselves, what you're trying to accomplish. And I'd say it's not. I wouldn't necessarily think about is are we replacing Access? It's are we replacing capabilities in certain areas with other approaches to solve the same goal? And the answer is yes. What Access used to do, or thing for the end user scenario pieces of that, are definitely there or coming in some way or other, just not necessarily the same way.
Okay, thank you. Any suggestions for replacement for PowerPoint slide libraries? Many customers collect individual slides from suborgs and compile them for CXO level reports. They mourn the loss of this capability.
We feel the same way.
Yeah, we love that thing too. So
yeah. It was a big loss when that was gone.
I will generically say that I'm aware that some people, if you do a search on the internet using your favorite search engine, Bing, of course, then that people have built some slide library-like functionality in a custom way. But at least within the product, we wish it was there too. So,
one thing that I'm seeing is that Sway is starting to replace some of those functionalities of PowerPoint. So. That's where I could see Sway potentially being something that could replace the document library. And now that the Sway has multi-author capability, that's where that can really start.
It's definitely worth exploring.
Yeah. Several of the sites that I work on, they're actually replacing not just PowerPoint, but also like video training content with Sways. So that's definitely a lot of the content owners are going in that direction.
Okay. Next question. We are a global company with a single tenancy. We have been told that site collections should be less than 100 gigabytes. However, if we have multiple site collections for each country, can we create site collections with subsites that are larger than 100 gigabytes? Or should our site collections and subsites be less than 100 gigabytes? And then there's a follow-along question, but do we want to take that one first?
Yeah, so why don't I start, and I'm sure Jared or others can jump in too.
Oh, yeah.
I think, first of all, 365 supports up to a terabyte on a per-site collection basis. But I also want to say that we don't necessarily, certainly internally, we don't advocate building deep site collections and throwing everything in one. We would rather a team and project have its own space, its own site collection, and let them manage that, then have a huge, deep site collection. Because the level of control, the administratability, that's all much better if you have multiple site collections versus piling all in one. And if every site collection can go up to a terabyte, yes, it does include all subsites on that site collection. But keep in mind, there's no reason not to have multiple site collections because ultimately, a lot of the technologies we talk about now are all search-based or all metadata-based, where it doesn't, the site collection boundary that used to matter matters less now. It doesn't matter with Delve. It doesn't matter with search. It doesn't matter with metadata-driven nav. You can span site collections. In fact, our sales portal is about 20 site collections that, and it all looks like, from an end-user perspective, one portal. No one would ever know, but it was 20. And again, there's no real reason to go too deep, but I'd love to hear more follow-on on that one.
Well, I think from a operational, and even though we're talking Office 365, the same rule of thumb when you're dealing with on-prem, you don't want to have the site collection databases be too large because then maintenance can't occur on those databases as readily as larger databases.
Yeah.
I mean, the smaller versus larger, when you have smaller databases, you can back them up faster, restore them faster, re-index them faster. And if you're able to, and most people think, oh, well, this is going to the cloud, it's still a database that's up there that has to be managed by somebody. And by making it smaller more numerous. Like you said, the boundaries are gone. A lot of those boundaries that were very restrictive back in 2007, even the 2010 days, mm-hmm. are now gone. 2013 and 2016.
And 5 terabyte now.
Exactly. Yeah,
and I would note, I think even for the on-prem world, it's larger than 100 gigs. That was a number I remember touting 5 years ago.
2 terabyte. Yeah, 2 terabyte.
So it's really bound by your ability to, you know, do those maintenance operations, to set up mirroring, log shipping, whatever your DR strategy is. You know, those are to me more the gating factors for most people. You know, because you can unify the content using Content by Search Web Part, like David was saying.
And we've stuck to a 500 gigabyte maximum for on-prem site collections in the custom portals realm. We've stuck to 500 because that's the easiest to manage while giving the largest room. But then we start sharding the database as necessary to split it apart.
And then the next part of this question, and you guys may have just touched upon it, is can we create top-level site collections like company.sharepoint.com, France site collection, England site collection, U.S. site collection? Each of these plus sub-sites are much larger than the 100 gigabyte, or
right.
must we have many top-level under the root site collections?
So I think you know, the first thing, the site collection is the boundary for a database. You can't have a database that spans multiple, a site collection which spans multiple databases. So, you know, you can't have, you know, a top-level site collection and a sub-site be located in different databases. Now, that said, you can mount a site collection in the on-prem world only. You could have, you know, root site WAC France, root site WAC London, whatever. You can do that within the on-prem product. So I don't know if I answered the question. Did you hear something different in it?
I think there was a different piece that I heard on that question, which mm-hmm. is, if let's say I want to do like company.sharepoint.com, WAC sites, WAC France, company.sharepoint.com, WAC sites, WAC England, you can absolutely do that. And in fact, we enable self-service provisioning at Microsoft, so anyone in the company does. We have 70,000 site collections on 365, and that doesn't even include our OneDrive for Business site collections. Right. So yes, we absolutely do that model. And as a tenant admin on 365, you can create the site collections that you need to, or you can choose to turn on self-service. But the general rule is, yeah, you provision what you need effectively, and it's up to you in terms of your governance. In fact, there's a governance topic webinar also on Microsoft.com that where we go into a lot more detail on how Microsoft governs.
Right. The big thing, it goes back to making sure you, even if you're not actually managing the databases yourself, by having smaller databases, you're going to be able to go through maintenance windows a lot faster, those sorts of things. So that's why I always say try and keep them as small and light as possible. 100 gigabytes might be, if you can stick to 100 gigabytes, that's great. If you need larger, I would say don't go over 500 at the most.
One thing I want to add to that statement is that keep in mind that for cloud, it's not the site collection content isn't all in the database anymore. Like mm-hmm. the blobs themselves are now stored directly in shredded storage in Azure, effectively, so that you can't. That's why they can make a site collection 1 to 5 terabytes. One is the current default, and you can up it as a tenant admin to go up to 5 if you need to in certain sites. But again, those files themselves are not actually in that database anymore in cloud. And that's actually one of the reasons why we can grow so large and manage this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We'll move to the next question. SharePoint 2016 replaced Forefront Identity Manager with Microsoft Identity Manager 2016. When I installed the preview of both systems, the additional SharePoint connector plugin for MIM 2016 was a broken link. How can I connect SharePoint 2016 to pull profiles from MIM 2016? Is this anything that we've had an experience with?
I don't think we have the right people here for that one. I'm guessing, looking at Jared's face, I think he agrees.
No, unfortunately, the way we've set up all of our big custom portals at Microsoft is we have core central shared services of user profiles, taxonomy, and search. And the great thing about my team or my former team is we could just ran SharePoint. We'd have to run all the shared services. And those were a lot of times where the problems occurred. Sure. And so I don't know what they've run into on that.
Well, and Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, we as we've partnered for product team to hand them, because of, we're basically running two flavors of SharePoint. Our on-prem flavor of SharePoint is we've got on-prem. We also use 365 dedicated, run by the product team. We also use 365 multi-tenant, which is our primary tenancy. But for the dedicated, that's where we've been handing the product group our on-prem shared services to run that on our behalf. And I know that's what they're doing is they're using the they're doing the import from the AD,
right.
But we haven't actually explicitly done that setup ourselves.
Yeah,
with, we just the don't identity have, manager. Yeah,
exactly. We just don't have that person in the room to yeah, talk
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry.
Have we given up on the publishing features CMS of SharePoint? As I did not see too much investment in SharePoint 2016. Many of our customers are using it for their intranet, and we are losing that market against EPI server and other products.
I'd say the future of SharePoint Day that was last week, May the 4th, has a pretty good kind of preview view on the future of publishing. I'd say the product has heard loud and clear that it needs to be easy to publish. From a publishing perspective, it's got to be beautiful, and it's got to be responsive so it works on all devices. The product group has heard that loud and clear. They talked about what they're doing on that front. We're, in fact, already piloting some next-generation team site publishing scenarios. So absolutely, I'd say the core content management that's in SharePoint, in other words, things like content types and taxonomy, that's still foundational, and that's not changing. That's baked in. The how the publishing happens and the ease of which building pages, that's what's evolving. In addition to the next generation SharePoint framework, the application model on top of it to continue to further evolve how people build on top of that next generation set of experiences. But again, what I would strongly encourage is watch the future SharePoint content. I think there's links to it on blogs.office.com. And that's where you can get a lot more information on what we've already pre-announced as a company around what publishing will be.
And I'll add on to that a little bit too. First of all, it's probably about 40 or 50 minutes into that video that David was talking about where they talk about the new publishing capabilities. I think the question was really focused on the on-prem world. And one of the announcements they made at this conference was, you know, while all these new features, and including the new publishing, will come to Office 365 first, they're going to release in the next calendar year, I think they called it a feature pack.
Feature pack.
Which will backwards deploy a lot of this new functionality to the on-prem world. So, you know, the goodness of the new publishing model will come there too.
Yeah. Very cool. Next question. Is MS Flow meant to overtake traditional SharePoint Designer, Visual Studio designed workflows?
I can kind of jump at that one because I've actually been looking at both the Logic App APIs in Azure as well as now Microsoft Flow for a while now, and I really feel like they are trying to, in essence, take the old workflow manager and move it into these off SharePoint systems so that there's more management and capability. One of the key problems we had with our on-prem custom portal sites is people would set up workflows. Then there would be an error, and they'd be contacting us, can you please pull the ULS log for blah, 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 blah. Whereas now, if I have a problem, I have actually built 4 or 5 Logic apps in Azure that I use against my personal SharePoint sites and such. And if any of them error, I can go into Azure and take a look at the errors and say, okay, where did it error? Oh, it errored on this step. Great. I can get that information, not have to dive into a SharePoint ULS log and try and decipher the .NET error from the workflow manager, which a lot of times we'd give them, we would look up those errors, wasn't helpful at all. We couldn't figure out why the workflow was failing. So I really feel the flow.microsoft.com and the Logic apps are kind of the next evolution of workflow. And the great thing about it is they tie not only to SharePoint and Office 365, but they can tie to Exchange. They can tie to Azure databases. They can tie it to Salesforce. They can tie to Twitter.
Yeah, Box, Slack.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, it's a brave new world here at Microsoft where we play nice with others.
Yeah,
and keep in mind that...
Sorry.
He totally threw me. And keep, the other thing about this is there's different layers. So I heard the question also mentioned Visual Studio. So that's not going away. You can still build deep Logic apps with Visual Studio and all the rest of it. Or an end user can build a simple flow. I think that's the that's the point, that we're trying to make it so the business and employee can directly do get as far as they can themselves. There's forms.microsoft.com, forms.office.com, I think it is, that where you can build new forms for your solution, but if you still want a deeper development form, go use Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. Same thing for Logic Apps and Flows, right? You've got the end user scenario with Flow, and you've got the deeper developer scenario. Both are supported. So I'd say the need for something like a SharePoint Designer clearly diminishes because you're using other paths to either have the end user workflow capability built out in Flow or, you know, the new publishing capabilities of the product that they've started talking about too.
And one of the advantages when you have the workflows off the server, this goes back to when I think about on-prem servers, everything we can take that's running on the SharePoint servers, if we can take it off the SharePoint server, like workflows running on a different system. You know, I know they've pulled the Office web apps are now a separate server again, but everything you pull off that SharePoint server now can be upgraded and maintained a lot easier in an on-prem world, and it makes it a lot easier for the system administrators of that SharePoint farm. They can actually keep up with updates and not break the business logic that's already been built by the business users.
Okay, great. Next. While SharePoint is dependent on Windows Workflow Manager, and there have been frequent updates to SharePoint 2013, 2016, there does not seem to be any investment in Workflow Manager software. How does Microsoft IT update and manage workflow servers used by SharePoint?
Well, the on-prem workflow management servers, we've maintained with just the normal patching. Yes, there's not a lot of new patches, so the good thing is they've been able to stay pretty stable for a long time. But as we talked in the previous question, we're starting to look at other ways to actually run workflows and using the Azure technology. One of the interesting things for me as the cloud lead for my organization is, as we're looking at how this can run in Azure, Azure Stack is coming for on-prem. I'll have Logic Apps on-prem. So I'll have that whole workflow engine that we can run up in Azure in an on-prem world that can run against on-prem only resources. So if I can get people to think in that sense and start looking at Flow and Logic Apps and using those kind of technologies, we'll be able to deploy it on-prem as well.
Okay, perfect. Design it for the cloud, run it anywhere.
Exactly. That's what Azure Stack is really driving for us, which is incredible.
And that's also a whole new cloud application model. Build your SharePoint application extension. Build it for the cloud and play it on-prem.
So that you're ready someday when you want
to
move.
When you're ready to go to the cloud, it's an easy jump.
Right. What is the future of InfoPath forms? Is it end of life? Is there a replacement?
I'll start off with that one. There have been no announcements made about InfoPath other than to say that we'll support it through, I think it's 2026.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow,
so,
that's a long time.
Yeah, so it'll be supported now, tomorrow, and for the near future. I don't know that there's been any public-facing statements beyond that.
Beyond, I think, also that you can, again, go back to some of the new forms technology that's coming out elsewhere, like the forms.office.com scenario. And again, I think it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Clearly, forms.office.com is not the rich InfoPath. I'll cover every possible InfoPath scenario, because InfoPath became a multi-purpose tool for pretty much anything from XML generation, effectively. So they're basically saying, what scenarios are we going to tackle what InfoPath used to do, and how do you pull them out, and forms.office.com is a piece of that, and there are others that are available as well. But I'd say, you know, as Sam said, InfoPath is not going anywhere.
For many years.
Many 10 years.
That's a long time.
On prem, and it's supported on Office 365, so there's no reason to worry about jumping. Clearly, as you build your next generation solutions of forms, evaluate. Can you do something simply with one of the end user solutions, or do you go do something with Visual Studio? But if you've got something with InfoPath already, let it be.
Okay. Are we working on hybrid scenario for managed metadata service in upcoming releases of SharePoint 2016 or 2016 plus?
Yeah. The answer is yes. How much is public? So the answer is yes.
I don't know the public answer to that question. That's the challenge. I think we're both looking at each other, thinking about it. So what we can say is that we've had a replication tool ourselves for ever since we went live on cloud. We built one from the get-go. The APIs were all there from a product to enable us to replicate our taxonomy from on-prem to cloud. It was really important to us. We have a fairly large corporate taxonomy. And you know, we weren't going to go to the cloud without it because you know our major sites use it, and search. You know, we've got all refiners that need it, so that's been a requirement for us. And we've been, I think the best we can say is the product group is well aware of what MSIT has done, and they're well aware of what the market needs in this space to help it get better. But I'm not sure what we publicly announced.
And I'll genericize that comment. I think the good news for everyone out there and internally here at Microsoft is that the product group really is starting to really get the hybrid needs here. You know, they're, whether it's managed metadata, whether it's you know search. You know, this is an area where you know they're aware that businesses will continue to operate both on-prem and in the cloud for a significant period of time.
Yeah.
And so there are major investments being made in that space. We just don't have anything. We don't want to. We don't want to speak out of turn here.
No, exactly. But what I would say that the hybrid story overall, the product really, as Sam said, deeply gets. And I'm actually been really thrilled with our partnership there and watching what's been happening. And hybrid search has been, for example, a great story. So understand that, you know, hybrid for us, and now we've got hybrid search live, for example. So understand that, yes, the product does get that for large enterprise to get to cloud, there's going to be a period of time we're going to be in a hybrid state, or you may stay in a hybrid state forever. So therefore, we better deal with it.
I think it's almost more important for not just enterprise, but for SMB in the small and medium business areas, because a lot of the small and medium businesses have small single servers that they're running in their business, and they're trying to get that data moved into an Office 365 tenancy over time, but it can be difficult. And I know the Fast Track has been able to help some of those folks along, but they're still running on-prem, and having that hybrid search is super helpful. And I know, as a Microsoft, just a Microsoft employee, I love being able to go to our search page and only have one page and say, and here's all the results on-prem and cloud. It's like, it's just nice.
And I think that's expected. I think anytime you type something into a search window, you expect it to be considering all form factors from both.
Exactly.
I think that was what we found before we had hybrid was, and we had a kind of fake hybrid for a very long time, where we would have multiple tabs, and you click on the other tab to find content on the other side of the fence, effectively. What we learned, though, was that employees want an integrated result set. They don't want to have to click on another vertical. And I think you know part of our challenge there was you start to realize, in order to find your content, you used to kind of have to know where was it on cloud or was it on-prem to even start finding it, which is clearly not optimal from a discovery scenario perspective. So this brings it together. And John, did you want to add to that at all?
I was going
to
say another nice thing is on the search results. So, like, you'll still tell the users that, hey, this is on CorpNet, and you can do that in the results display template rather than having a separate tab. So you can quickly say, you're not on CorpNet connection right at the moment. There's a little icon there that says, hey, you have to be on CorpNet to see this item. So some basic stuff like that just really increases the user experience.
Yeah. That's been key and critical in a lot of your publishing portals, hasn't it?
Yes.
Just both the taxonomy and the search.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. For, like you said before, you know, from everything from the filters to canned searches to the display templates, we use that heavily across several sites.
Okay. Can permissions on Sway be customized so only certain users see particular presentation? Do we know?
I haven't played with Sway enough, unfortunately. And most of the time, from what I've seen, it's public. If you know the URL, people can see it. I know they're working on things like that. They know, if this is going to be big for enterprise, they have to have that security available.
I just don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
I play with it every once in a while.
We've only done public ones ourselves.
Exactly.
With SharePoint 2016, how does the choice of SQL Server 2012 R2, 2014, or the soon-to-be-released 2016 affect farm operations?
Well, I will say this. Even on 2013, jumping from SQL Server 2012 R2 to 2014, we gained so much performance improvement just in SQL operations. SQL improved the product itself. Again, going to 2016, there's a lot of advantages there. One of the key advantages for business continuity slash disaster recovery is its capability to take an on-prem database and copy it to Azure SQL DB, so you can have a live copy in the cloud while you have your live copy running on-prem, and that can help a DR scenario potentially, because that can be a relay point to a DR farm. SQL Server, obviously, every time they release a new version, you get so much better performance. And I know also the BI aspects. The SharePoint Server 2016 can only use the SQL Server 2016 BI components. So if you're doing BI, you really need SQL Server 2016. And lately, I know talking with the DBA from my old team, those SQL Server upgrades are getting easier and easier for them to do. Yeah, there's downtime, but a lot of times because we've started moving to this modern engineering, you're spinning up servers next to and you're using virtual servers. You're not using physical servers anymore, especially even in an on-prem world. So it's easy to spin up another server, move everything over, and then get rid of the old server. So that's been super helpful, I know, as things progress forward.
And we upgraded all of our on-prem farms, certainly all the custom portal farms, to use SQL 2014 already, right?
Yes, correct. And if I don't know if shared services ones are in 2016 yet or not. I know the custom portals lag behind because they need stability and those sorts of things.
I know our 2016 SharePoint farms were using 2014, and I know that they're piloting 2016 in certain scenarios.
Yeah, the BI scenario is a big one.
Especially in the BI.
Okay. How are you planning to use SharePoint Framework?
That's an interesting question. We're still kind of working that through because here's the thing. The SharePoint Framework it changes a little bit how you're building application, how you're integrating with especially other things and tying them in. You know, what's changed, I guess, in the last 5 years is the how rich the client-side models are, how rich TypeScript and JavaScript has become in terms of building a rigorous application on top of it that can do what you need to do. And the SharePoint framework is designed to sit on kind of a much more open standard web-based model and approach. That kind of foundationally, that's why I'd say we will build parts. We're still kind of looking into saying what parts we can get from a product as they build new on the SharePoint framework and new parts on the publishing model. And where do we see some additional level of gaps? I will say that once we've played around with SharePoint framework, as we get to a point that we can really start to build on it, we will try some pilots, but we haven't figured out exactly what those sets are going to be. But everything from, hey, I need a new web part to integrate with this other line of business system, or hey, I need HR data coming in from my payroll or whatever, right? I may want to integrate this with Portal. Today, a lot of those things were provider-based applications running in Azure. Well, it's great that the provider application model was a great step up from a full trust model in that it got a code off running off SharePoint. The downside to the provider model was that it had to be spun up. So I hit a site. The first thing that happens is that provider loads, it instantiates, it does the connection, it passes the token to Azure, and you're good. But it still takes a little slower, and it's not as integrated into the page experience. So the nice thing about the new web part framework is I can build parts that directly fit into the SharePoint experience a lot more seamlessly, and it's no longer this, I guess, effectively this other embedded experience. It's really in my experience now. So generically, that's what we're doing.
But, it's nice. Yeah, you're correct. The provider-hosted app a lot of time are using iframes. So when you're using the iframes, like you said, you're taking out of that experience and you have this browser inside a browser, if you will. And that's what I'm looking for the most out of the framework is not having to do that anymore. And as the security-minded person in the back of my head, iframes, I don't like the iframes because that could go someplace, that could be hijacked and be taken the wrong place. Whereas if you can, with a framework, if you can actually have your code natively look like it's running in the SharePoint but be running someplace else, that's brilliant.
I think a great example for us will be those HR examples. As we take our HR portal to the cloud, we expect that a lot of those parts will be able to rebuild effectively as in the SharePoint framework.
Apps. Yeah.
Okay. Next question. At some point, will SharePoint Online allow anonymous sharing, not requiring an MSA, to retrieve files? We're looking to replace our FTP server for file sharing with our client.
So today, be transparent. We don't turn on anonymous sharing on our tenancy today. It's there as an option. 365 already supports. I can flip a switch and say, enable external sharing with people that are authenticated, or enable external sharing with anonymous users. You can flip that switch and let it be on. we as an enterprise, we've made the call that we're going to keep that off. We don't allow anonymous access on our tenancy today. We may at some point revisit that decision because, of course, the product is getting better and better in terms of how those anonymous links work. But part of that is, you know, an anonymous link already, let's say you turn it on. You flip that switch and you go, I want anonymous links on my tenancy. Then you flip the switch again on the site collection and say, on this specific site collection, I'm going to enable anonymous links. Then one of the nice things now is I can say, this guest link, the get a link, and it's now available to anyone who gets the link, is available only for X number of days. And so I can, there's levels of granularity to turn on anonymous, but it is there now.
I would say as a replacement potentially for that solution, would look at using some sort of logic app or workflow, flow app, have a document library, they could have all the information, do their approvals, and then have it move to a Azure blob. And then you can publish an Azure blob URL via, or you can even use a CDN in front of the Azure blob URL to make it a nice looking URL.
The nice thing about get a link is I can literally just go into SharePoint, get a link. Mm-hmm. If I've got anonymous turned on, it gives me an anonymous link. I can just mail around and done. But content never moves. It stays right there, and the link is available for whoever gets it, the content. But again, that's if you so choose to turn anonymous on your tenancy.
Yeah, that's a lot of risk. People don't like that risk. Right. That's why the Azure solution might be a better one, better way around.
Either way.
Yeah.
How is Microsoft IT doing DR planning for search, as it is quite huge, and doing a full crawl might take days? Are you doing any index restoration for your DR plan? How can I get more information on this, as one of my customers is looking for it?
I think they're talking more about on-prem than cloud here.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so here at Microsoft IT, you know, basically, you know, today we have two search farms. We have one here in the Puget Sound area. We have one down in the Bay Area near San Francisco. And so we have two full-scale farms. We use one for our non-production testing. It's what gets the code first. It's our upgrade testing place. But we do keep the two reasonably in sync. So for us, our approach has been, and I think this is the question you're after, is we have duplicates in two places. When we deploy a change, we deploy it to both places. Both instances crawl all the same content. So that way, if there is a disaster event at some point in the future, we can just refederate our consuming farms to the secondary farm in the Bay Area. So.
And that's in addition to the hybrid appliance, which is crawling independently of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. When will Calendar Web Part allow a weekdays only view? It's a popular feature request, but so far only third-party solutions can achieve it. Not sure we have any answers on that one.
I don't think we have any answers. I would say head to the SharePoint user voice, vote it up, make sure you get all your friends to vote it up, and they really listen to the user voice heavily.
The other thing I want to call out is that as we go to 365 groups, the notion of having calendaring is often going to be in the group part of it now, which is more coming from OWA as opposed to from SharePoint. So
that's a good point.
Good to know. Not sure if this was already addressed, but will SharePoint Thesaurus for synonyms be available in SharePoint Online?
So today, the term store does... John, you may be able to answer this better than I can. The term store does support synonyms in both cloud and on-prem. In fact, we manage to that, and we build a glossary on top, which is where we actually have like code names and stuff for people who just want to understand what something is.
Right. Yeah, definitely it supports it now, and we submit things to the team that manages that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it does.
Okay. Is there any type of good, better, best white paper that describes those SQL Server version comparisons and benefits?
I think the best place to go to Microsoft.com. I think it's SQL Server.
Yeah, WAC SQL Server.
WAC SQL Server. And they have all sorts of good documentation there. Then the next stop would be TechNet and MSDN. That would be your next best place. TechNet for your IT pros, the system admins, looking at the systemic side of the SQL servers, and then MSDN for the developers to understand what code changes they have to make between the versions.
We should reach out to marketing and find out if they've got any.
You know, I don't know if we have any on the 2016 because they'd be wrapping up those results now, starting to write the papers. So.
And we do a lot of white papers and technical case studies on our that we post on our IT Showcase site off of Microsoft.com. And there is the next question, which I love this question. This SME roundtable is an excellent idea. Do these exist for other technologies? I love that. Yes, the answer is yes. This we do SME roundtables for all four of our publicly available courses, Cloud at Microsoft, SharePoint at Microsoft, Mobility at Microsoft, and Skype for Business at Microsoft. And we also offer several other webinars on different technology topics on how Microsoft does IT. So please visit our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site to see the future events. And you can sign up for ones like this.
And actually, just a quick question to lob one over to you. If they want a topic that's not in that list, do we take that on? I don't know this, so I just teed you up for maybe a bad answer. I'm sorry.
We love to get your feedback. So please put it in the IM window. We also have a questionnaire that we would love for you to fill out where you could suggest future topics for us. So we'll be posting a couple of questions momentarily. So that was perfect. And we are getting very close to the end of our hour. So I would like to ask our SMEs one final question. And actually, it's going to be an option. You can either answer, what is the one tip you would like to leave our customers with today? Or tell me what you're most excited about from the Future of SharePoint event last week. And while they're thinking about their answers, I do want to encourage you to fill in our survey. Give us your feedback. We want to know what you think about these sessions and get your feedback into what we should be doing different. With that, let's start over with David.
Well, I think picking one thing from a SharePoint event, it's hard for me. Because I sum it up by thinking SharePoint is back. I've seen that in press. I've seen people quote it. But as a Microsoft employee who's been working with SharePoint for many years, since near the beginning, but really since 2005 running engineering, yes, it felt like things weren't changing fast. And now it's unbelievable what we've got coming. And I'm really excited about it. But I guess in particular, from an IT perspective, you're managing a large enterprise. A lot of the governance conversations we've had with product groups around how do I manage, how do I keep secure, how do I protect my company, those things that they talked about loud and clear, everything from the provisioning process in product that's coming to classification in product that's coming to the work that they're doing on the compliance side to manage to that and protect your content based on those classifications, those are all fantastic things that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's a great one. Like David, I've actually been working on SharePoint since 2001, so I can't think of a time recently that I've been so jazzed about the product. Probably maybe the 2007 Big Bang where things really started to get huge. It's really hard to pick one thing, but I think I have to really express a lot of excitement and satisfaction around seeing the Office Graph experiences really find their way across the product. Right now, rolling across Office 365, you're seeing a new Dell profile experience rolling across tenants worldwide. If it's not there, it's coming soon to a tenant near you. Seeing the Office Graph-powered discovery link on your OneDrive for Business, which shows you documents from within your own network. The availability of the Office Graph to plug into from your own custom application perspective. Seeing that. Go across the product is really exciting. I'll close with this. The new SharePoint Home experience, again, powered by Office Graph, is probably one of the things that's got me most excited from this particular release.
Very good.
And I'll shift over to a tip, kind of on the business and content side. To fully take advantage of all the capabilities that SharePoint has, everything from taxonomy tagging to getting really good search results and easing the publication process, it's very, very highly recommended to create kind of a best practices guide that you can share with your content owners to kind of show them, how do I tag this item correctly? How do I use a certain content type? If you can make it easy for them, because not all of them are going to be as technical, that helps things immensely. In addition, throwing in things like how to make your pages accessible, because that's a hot topic lately, it's just a very good idea if you can get a nice, concise best practices guide that you can share when you're dealing with large sets of content owners.
Cool. I guess I actually kind of have both a tip and a something I'm excited about, because a tip that I would give most IT pros is make sure you go through your infrastructure and set up your farm to have good redundancy in every in all the application layers as well as the web apps. Reason why is now we go into the exciting thing is in SharePoint 2016, where we have some improved patching capabilities where you can do a truly zero downtime. Now, there's going to be time in the farm where it's going to be kind of in a read-only state. That's better than being totally down. And it's immensely capable of being able to shift some management windows instead of always having to do patches every Friday night after everyone's gone home and you're stuck at the office from, you know, 8 p.m. to midnight doing all these patches, because it's like, oh, now you can do them at a different time of the day and people can still get to data. So you can really work with a business to kind of minimize that downtime and make it actually a activity you can do during your normal workday.
Very good. We are near the end of our program, and I want to start by thanking our SMEs for stepping away from your day jobs to come talk to our customers. This is truly very important. And I want to thank our customers for joining us today. We truly enjoy the questions and the dialogue and the opportunity to come talk to you. I do want to say that we've just launched all four of the courses I mentioned on the Microsoft Virtual Academy in the last week. So they're open for everybody. All customers can go see our courses, Cloud at Microsoft, SharePoint at Microsoft, Mobility at Microsoft, and Skype for Business at Microsoft. Visit our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase for lots of technical white papers, articles, productivity guides, as well as videos. It's where you sign up for future SME roundtables and webinars. There's a wealth of information about how Microsoft does IT, and we're here to help you out. So with that, thank you and have a great day. We are back with the extended footage portion of the program. We have some additional questions we want to answer. So thank you all for staying behind. Next question, does Microsoft have a tool that can basically move content or copy a site to another site collection in SharePoint Online? SharePoint Online PowerShell is kind of limited.
So maybe I can take the first swing at that. Sure. This is a space that by and large, the company has left to third-party partners. However, there was an announcement at the Future of SharePoint event where you could actually, very soon, and in the Office 365 space, you'll be able to select a document and move it between site collections for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. So this is something I'm very excited about that I think partially addresses the question. I don't know if you had something to add, David?
Well, no, the only thing I'd add to that is that the third-party ecosystem, that's literally what we use too. When we migrated our large enterprise portals, we used third-party products to help us do that. You know, we did a combination when we did migration. We would experiment with custom scripts that we built, what product would build with us to evaluate how to improve the APIs. Subsequently, those APIs have been updated, and our third parties are now using that. So I just say that is, you know, whether it's AvePoint, Metalogix, Metavis, whatever the product is, we used Metavis an awful lot to help us on migration. There's a rich ecosystem of partners available that they can help you migrate from prem to cloud, cloud to cloud, or wherever you need to go.
Yeah, and we use, obviously with David's team, we're one of those portals he mentioned, but we also use it to, you know, just to migrate from cloud to cloud to kind of create a dev or test site. So you just replicate it over here, lock it down, and you can do all your work here because you really, in SharePoint Online, that's how you do your dev sites. So those tools are really easy to use.
And if I remember correctly, Office 365 is part of a program where you can provide data backups on some sort of physical disk and actually ship it in and have them provide that data to be available, if I'm not correct.
There's a fast track program. I'm not sure what their mechanism is anymore. It started off that way. I'm not sure if it's still that today.
Oh, I know
but I'm aware of the fast track program, and they would be able to help a customer move large amounts of data into the cloud. Definitely.
Exactly. And that way they don't have to try and transmit it over, let's say you're on a 1 meg connection at your office.
Sure. Well, and keep in mind that the migration pipeline also pushes from your environment to Azure first and then to SharePoint. And so it's designed to speed things up a lot too.
Oh, yeah.
And just because I can't resist, I'll add on a little bit more too. Most of the major tools offer a couple of things that I think really make migration easy. Number one, they can do incremental replication, rather. You know, so that way you can have a live site that you're still using on-prem, you can have one in the cloud, and you can be replicating until the time it's time to cut over, you know, set read-only and cut over immediately. And so that way you're not taking any extended downtime. And the second thing is most of the major tools also feature some sort of scripting, PowerShell-based. So you can, you know, if you have to do this in bulk, there are ways to migrate, you know, lots and lots of sites at the same time. So, good question.
Okay, thank you. How much internal marketing is done on deployment of new features like Delve, Planner, Groups, et cetera?
Basically, the change management and adoption program that IT does. And, you know, it's actually one of the interesting challenges, I'd say, in some ways, as the product space has evolved so fast. How do we keep our employees educated? And honestly, I think we're trying to get better at that as well. But you know, part of it is when we know something's coming or changing, we'll announce it on Yammer groups. We have internal Yammer groups where we say, hey, this capability is coming, and we encourage employees who care about SharePoint or these technologies to follow those groups. And that's where we'll post a lot of this information to. We also have an internal SharePoint users group where that's tied to the Yammer group, where we'll do monthly meetings again around here's what's coming, here's what we want to tell you about that we're thinking about. And I guess lastly, because we are Microsoft and we dog food our own technologies, we also have an elite program internally where we say, you know what, try this. This is next generation X. We're going to roll this out. Give us feedback about it. We'll do a formal dog food program. Did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll add to that. The elite program, just, you know, I'll translate this because I think this is a way of thinking about it that may, you know, help your users externally, is the elite program is a lot like our insider programs that we've done for Office and Windows and I think another team, just Xbox Insider, just started. So, you know, that's our early adopters, get some early feedback and whatnot. And then I'll also mention that for the right programs, we may also include, you know, those little table tents in cafeterias. We might also have posters. It just depends on the rollout. And I think. Okay.
Well, I was just going to say it's one of my friend's favorite answers. It depends. There have been sometimes, though, I will say the video portal. We were actually in Houston giving a presentation, and all of a sudden the video portal was there, and we were kind of shocked by that. It was, what's this? And we're all kind of looking at each other, kind of, we don't know. What is this? So it has happened sometimes with a product group. That's the fun part about being internal testers, is sometimes they just turn on features and we're like, what's this? But other times we get enough feedback, and there's enough, you know, if you follow the blogs, part of the insider program. Also tick the first, I'm trying to remember what the exact setting is, first release settings for at least your IT users. You'll start seeing these things show up, and then you can say, okay, what's this? Normally it's announced. Channels.
Yeah, outside of Microsoft, there's definitely a release cadence and announcement program for those in the first release.
And what they've started to do is on your tenancy, the tenant administrator can see, here's updates of what's coming, and now there's news being published there for at least to give the tenant admin visibility.
I will also add to what you say. We have a group that creates productivity guides for the new features that are rolled out, new versions of our software. And we like to make those productivity guides available to you, our customers. So you can find those on our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site. Look under the productivity guides. You are very welcome to take these guides and brand them with your own employee company's logo and send them out to your employees to help the adoption of the new technologies. Okay. Next question. You mentioned a governance component on the IT Showcase site. Mm-hmm. Do you have that URL? And unfortunately, this is after the program, so we aren't live. I'll encourage you to just go to the Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. There is a content page that you can search and do a search for governance, and you'll see a lot of articles on that and webinars. David has participated in webinars, as well as our course, the SharePoint at Microsoft course, has a governance module in it that David also participated in.
And specifically the webinar, I think that's the most recent the most recent governance course, also talks about how you can do governance for your own company, how we use the product to do governance, as well as the solutions that we've made available on GitHub, on dev.office.com.
Okay. Next question, how do you choose Excel from a SharePoint list?
How do you choose? You mean like export?
Maybe go into data sheet view, I think.
Well, there's a data sheet view, but they could be also, there's an export to Excel.
That's what I was thinking.
It's up in the ribbon, a part of the list. Items, but lists.
Right. So, I'm not sure which one they're addressing. So as Jared mentioned, up in the ribbon, there's a way to export to Excel. There's also what we now call quick edit mode. I don't think we call it data sheet view anymore, but quick edit mode, where you can edit things as if they're in an Excel type spreadsheet. So, I think that's the answer.
I think that would be your answers, yeah.
With that, we've reached the end of all the questions. So again, thank you for your time, and we hope that this session has been useful.